Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Sung-Yoon Lee, who's a professor of international affairs at the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University. And he's also a National Asia Research Fellow and an associate in research in the Korea Institute at Harvard University. Welcome to Background Briefing, Sung-Yoon Lee.
Thank you for having me.
And what do you make of North Korean's propaganda website saying, urging the South to evacuate the islands, some of which were shelled in 2010? Is this a threat or a promise or what?
The threat this time around is credible, I would say. North Korea is very good at psychological warfare, and it prefers graduated escalation. Over the past week, we know North Korea has really said a lot of things, from launching a precision nuclear strike against Washington and South Korea to wiping out a South Korean island near the location you just mentioned, the site of the deadly shelling in 2010. I would say this is not your typical North Korean bluster and broadside, because the confluence of events over the past several weeks, the past couple of months, makes a North Korean deadly yet controlled, limited attack quite possible.
So what is the South doing? Are they evacuating these islands?
Well, there's been some counter bluster by the South Korean government as well. And, you know, this creates enormous psychological, in pragmatic terms, political pressure for the new South Korean government. Park Geun-hye, Korea's first ever female elected leader, just assumed office in late February and, of course, does not really want a North Korea crisis on her hands, President Park, that is. But North Korea, of course, is trying its best to paint the new South Korean leader into a corner. This disrupts the livelihoods of the citizens, the residents of those islands, engaged in fishing and so forth. They've been evacuating. They've been conducting drills, emergency drills. This is a major disruption.
So the North, of course, have been in their propaganda against the new South Korean leader, have sort of resorted to sexist kind of remarks, have they not?
Yes. A few days ago on Wednesday, they added a sexist twist to their bluster and mentioned something with respect to swish of the skirt, which is an old traditional chauvinistic Korean expression for aggressive or assertive women. So the message is the woman president, Park Geun-hye, should know her place and not say things. She's actually given some stern parental guidance, if you will, to the 20-something-year-old North Korean leader. She said she'll deal strongly with North Korean provocations, and she also said this kind of bluster and nuclear weapons development can only lead to North Korea's collapse. They're doing this, spending so much money on their weapons program while the people are going hungry. That's what she said.
Well, you know, for the longest time, Sung-Yoon Lee, the North has been belligerent and said amazing stuff and talking about nuclear attack on the United States. And as you know, new Secretary of Defense Chuck Hagel announced a couple of days ago that the U.S. is going to increase its numbers of interceptors in Alaska, although my interviews with physicists and others who know the program, this interceptor program, say that this thing is completely untested. So he may be spending an extra $1 billion, but nobody knows whether these missiles are going to work, these interceptors, in the first place. But it leads me to the point which I think is inescapable, and that is that the border between North and South Korea is the most militarized spot on the earth. It's the most dangerous spot on the earth. And if things start to get out of hand, you could have just an unspeakable conflagration.
That's right. I don't know about the physics, the technological aspects of any missile defense system, but we can be reasonably sure that North Korea is committed to further developing, enhancing their nuclear weapons and long-range missile technology. They've been at it for many, many years at great cost, at great sacrifice. And the ultimate objective is, of course, to be able to demonstrate to the U.S. and to the world that they have the capability to combine a nuclear warhead with a long-range missile that can potentially reach the United States. The objective is not to fire such a missile at the U.S., but to demonstrate that it can and to try to coerce or threaten the U.S. and South Korea, especially on the issue of U.S. troops in South Korea. So North Korea has a long-term objective in this. And if there were a war, that would be a disaster. At the same time, we know North Korea is not suicidal, so I don't think they're on the brink of launching an all-out war, even as they say such things.
So tell me then, Sung Yoon Lee, how do you start a war and limit it at the same time? I mean, this is what I guess you're suggesting, that they're going to do something like what they did last time. Remember, they sunk a South Korean warship, and then they shelled an island. And in both cases, the South sort of, you know, turned the other cheek, as they say in Christianity. So. The South's already said they're not interested in turning the other cheek. In fact, she has said, the new leader, that she'd go after the North Korean leadership.
Yes, her defense ministry spokesperson said that. That remains to be seen, because it really doesn't pay for South Korea to indefinitely escalate things with North Korea, although it may pay for Pyongyang to provoke, because South Korea has become an affluent country over the past generation. The South Korean people have so much to lose in terms of lives and treasure in the case of a war. And the public will not support continued escalation. The public is quite wary of such an indefinite escalative tension with North Korea. And North Korea knows that is one of South Korea's weaknesses as a democracy, as an affluent society with much to lose. And they're doing their best to, engage in this psychological kind of warfare, instilling fear in the South Korean population and putting enormous pressure on the South Korean government to go back to negotiations with a lot of concessions in tow.
So you've got a regime in the North that's under increasing international sanctions. They've very defiantly said they're never going to give up their nuclear program in exchange for any kind of deal. And you've got this young dynasty, leader of this dynasty in the North, needing to assert himself. That's the conventional wisdom, to prove his, you know, cojones, if you will, that he's a sufficient leader for this highly militarized state. But he's free to cause mischief, but up to a point. And then you're saying on the South side, they don't really want to escalate, even if they're provoked, because they've got too much to lose. So where's that line drawn? That's what's hard for me to understand.
Yes, it is a fuzzy line, and this has been the pattern over the past 60 years. This year marks the 60th anniversary of the end of the Korean War, which ended with a ceasefire agreement. I would say, although it's been unstable at times, most recently, as we saw in 2010, the situation in the Korean Peninsula, although it's been unstable, we have had de facto peace, no all-out war in and around the Korean Peninsula over the past 60 years. And you might say that South Korea's passivity in not having really retaliated on any occasion on the numerous, really countless occasions that North Korea has provoked over the past 60 years, that kind of passive stance has facilitated, furthered the protection of peace in Korea. So it's a torturous situation for the South Korean government. What do you do? Do you counter when North Korea attacks? South Korea probably will. What if North Korea threatens to do it again or does attack again? Do you counter again? Perhaps. What about the third time? At that point, I don't think the public will support that.
Well, but you also, just in closing, you've got the U.S. there, 30,000 troops. You've got them conducting a military exercise at the moment. So what kind of tripwire is that? I mean, the U.S. hasn't laid down a card, have they, saying if you attack the South, we'll nuke you? I mean, what's the U.S. policy?
I think nuking North Korea is out of the question, and probably South Korea would not wish for that either. It would create certainly the impression that this is disproportionate use of force. At the same time, I think the U.S. over the past 60 years has sent an unequivocal message to North Korea: you launch a war, we will fight, and we will march into Pyongyang. And that's why stability, power of balance has been maintained in the Korean Peninsula. The essential role of the U.S. troops in deterring North Korea, that's a major point that North Korea understands for now.
So just in closing, then, I get the impression that what you're saying is that in spite of all of the bellicose rhetoric, there is a kind of stability and nobody's really going to rock the boat too much.
Well, it's of course, South Korea has to suffer from time to time the indignity of controlled deadly attacks. But I think the consensus within the country is that suffering that kind of indignity is far better than escalating things and having a war in Korea, because we know the last war 60 years ago was so devastating, simply the most destructive, devastating event in all of Korean history, as it was.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Sung-Yoon Lee.
Thank you for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Sung-Yoon Lee, who is a professor of international affairs at the Fletcher School of Law and Diplomacy at Tufts University, a National Asia Research Fellow, and an associate in research at the Korean Institute at Harvard University. This has been Background Briefing. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow at 5 p.m. with another Background Briefing. Bye for now. One time, one time.